Quick question. Do you allow cursing?
Yes.
It's an old joke. Frank doesn't pronounce it thesaurus. He pronounces it thesaurus.
Thesaurus?
And when I asked him, what the fuck is a thesaurus? He's like, I don't believe in saying it thesaurus. It sounds like a goddamn dinosaur.
Three friends.
Come, my baby.
The world is not right.
The movie Two Planets comes out.
Too many topics.
Please, sign my Galvatron.
It's just so much been there, done that.
Super cookie-cutter hip-hop with it.
One podcast.
The lead singer of Nickelback doesn't have demons.
He gave away his heart.
Zero fucks given.
How sad is it that Axl Rose didn't kill himself for OD?
Django.
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 Where did the plastic stop and the human flesh start?
Oh, no.
Tony, you're close. We're going to kick you out of the podcast.
Your old fine podcast.
It's just so well done.
You bleed for me. I didn't get to know. Just one little bit of bleed for me.
Oh, hold on.
All I ever wanted was to be at your service, but now I'm alone, cause you're here and you're gone. And all I ever wanted was to feel I had a purpose, and now it's all gone. But if you could give me just one love, just one love.
Yeah, talking about Daredevil in a movie, I'm now humming like one of the songs from the soundtrack. I like the soundtrack of that movie a lot, too.
You know, I don't remember the Daredevil soundtrack at all. It's been a long time since I've seen it.
It depends on what music you're into. It was more of a rock soundtrack. And I don't know. I like that movie. And I just, it amazed me. I have to remember, though, like between the age of people in this hive mentality sometimes, and then there's this age of everything, like either has to be the greatest ever or it just sucks.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of, and at that time people were tired of Ben Affleck, and decided
that was pre-Healy, right? Though there was like the build up to Healy was the peak of we're sick of Ben Affleck, but that was part of the build up to that, I think.
And it was part of the build up. And even though I didn't see that movie, I heard that it was just an abomination. Did you see it?
Nah. I didn't get past gobble gobble. I was like, nah, never mind. I'm not into it.
Okay. Yeah. I kind of get that. Like, I don't know. Maybe the guy just, I think if you stay too long in Hollywood, you just begin to lose your perspective of, you know, who you are, where you came from. And maybe Ben did that a little bit. I don't know. But just separately speaking, Daredevil isn't a bad movie.
I've watched all of the DCEU movies, and none of them have been terrible. I'm not like, I didn't do cartwheels after seeing most of them, but they're all right. They've got their problems, and I can definitely see if you're a hardcore fan, especially with guys like Superman and Batman, where they have these really devout followings. But if you can watch the movies objectively, it's like, no, that was all right. You know, especially the extended editions where they go into more detail, because I know like the theatrical edition, it just was partially incomprehensible at times. So I think if you watch those movies, they're all right. And there are all these people who are like, well, you just need to flush everything and start all over again. It's like, no, I mean, they screwed up. I think, you know, you need to fix what's broken with these guys, but you don't need to actually give them up entirely. I think that those movies are okay. But if you get on the internet, they're up there with the Christopher Nolan movies, or they're great works of art, and Zack Snyder's a misunderstood genius, or it's something for the toilet. And it's like, there's middle ground, guys. Calm down, okay? And I get that a lot with movies. I have an easier time, I think, embracing movies that are disliked or disregarded, because so many people put so much work into these things that most movies have something, some redeeming value, just because somebody at some point cared about what they were doing. And I think, like, when recently they were talking to Ahmed Best, the guy who played Jar Jar, and this guy was contemplating suicide based on the backlash that Jar Jar Binks got. And I didn't give a rat's ass about Jar Jar. I had major problems with that character and everything that they were doing in those prequels. But when you reach a level of vitriol where people are like, I don't want to be on this earth anymore, because it's the thing, like, that's the thing that this guy did. That's what he's known for. It's like, if you Google him, he's just Jar Jar. He's defined by this role, and everybody hates him, and everybody hates his role. And it's like, we've lost lost our sight of what this is supposed to be about. We've lost sight of what it is to be like human beings on this planet when we're at this point. And the fact is, there's a whole generation of people that watch those prequels and love them. I don't. But I think that when you get to the point where you're so hyped up and so angry over a freaking movie that you're having that kind of a negative impact on a human life, it's like you need to just stop and kind of step back. And I'm a critical guy by nature, but I try to be analytical. I try not to be hateful. But I'm like, I need to remember, you know, this is people's art. This is people's, there's love in this. And you don't want to just completely destroy somebody just because you can, just because you're getting your jollies off of, you know, getting that anger out. It's like, you can be angry, but can you be constructive? Or can you just like maybe put that, you know, have that conversation with your buddies off the side and don't bring it into the world where you're sharing it with everybody and putting that negatively on everything, you know, you touch. And that's one of the problems with your Twitters and your social media these days is people just, it seems like they want to just purge all the darkest elements of themselves into a public sphere and contaminate the lives of other people, where there's some stuff, put that shit in a box and stick it under your bed, you know, or share that with your friends and get it out of your system and don't bring it into the public sphere. Remember that there are other human beings that you're affecting with your bullshit.
Yeah, I think it's okay to be critical, but I think that what a lot of people do, it's beyond criticism, and it's just straight garbage, because it's the easiest thing in the world to just say, oh, this sucks. That's not critical. That's you being a mindless fucking idiot. That's it's lazy. It's actually the opposite of being critical. You're not even saying why it sucks. You're just saying that it sucks and hope that somebody else joins you so then you can be cool just because you said something sucks. And that's, I can't even tell you the levels of which I hate that. Like, and I will, my case study for that always is the band Nickelback. Of course you've heard of Nickelback.
We have a promo where we're talking smack about Nickelback on for one of our shows. It's like, it was one of the early definitions of the show was us ragging on Nickelback. So you come, bring it. I want to hear this.
Well, my whole thing about like the band Nickelback, I remember when Nickelback came out, late 90s. And at the time, like, rock music was pretty rare to hear. You'd hear mostly Britney Spears and 98 Degrees or NSYNC or Backstreet Boys or name any bubblegum pop group that you hear. But rock, as presently constructed, was basically caught post-grunge alternative-ish. And it wasn't getting a lot of airplay. And then groups like Three Doors Down came out, and groups like Creed came out, and groups like Nickelback came out. And Nickelback is formulaic rock. They, you know, you got your guitarist, you got your lead singer with stringy hair and everything, and some of their songs sound the same, but Nickelback in 1999 and Nickelback right now in 2018, they're basically the identical group. And at the time when Nickelback came out, people were like, yes, rock music is back, and this is great, and now this is awesome. And then somewhere around 2008, like, you got a dude bro or two, they decided to jump online, and they were like, Nickelback fucking sucks. And then next thing you know, like, everybody jumped on that train and just said, well, they suck. What I was like, well, all I'm saying is, if they do suck, like, they suck because they tried to provide the same stuff that they were popular with, and now you're giving them shit for it. And that kind of, like, and so if I were them, I'd keep doing what I was doing, because even during those times where people were like, oh, they're the worst band in the world, they were still going platinum. Like, it's, and I guess I'm saying, like, it's the easy, and so now, even now, like, if you bring up Nickelback, there's a lot of people's knee-jerk reactions is just to say, well, they suck. And it's like, well, I mean, what do you want them to do at this point? Like, it's the easiest thing to do is to say they suck, but you don't even know why you're saying it. You're just saying that they do. In rant.
No worries. For me, I think it's just, it's like you said, there is an element of product to Nickelback. It's like, okay, this is the thing that people like. I'm going to, you know, 50 million people serve then, you know? Let me just keep selling this McMusic. But I'll be honest with you, I like them okay. I'm never going to be like, oh, put on some Nickelback. But if they're playing, I'm like, oh, that's all right song, you know? And it's one of those things, too, where the stuff you hated when you were a kid and you had to have those extreme opinions about everything, you either loved it or you hated it. And then 20 years on, there's the nostalgia where it's like, oh yeah, I remember that song. That was all right song. I'm kind of enjoying that as like background music and stuff. So like I said, it's, there's always a desire to find something to rail against. I'm never going to be like out there, you know, pimping for Nickelback, but they're all right. I've enjoyed some of their songs. I mean, you as a Spider-Man fan, you're probably digging on Hero, and that could have been a turning point too, is that song was ubiquitous and it was almost like, you know, the America Back song after 9/11 is like, no, we're still heroes. We're gonna come out of this okay. And I think that you end up with some emotional baggage that gets tied up into that. So I'm wondering if that wasn't an impact, you know, an element as well. But Nickelback's fine. You know, I don't love them. I don't hate them. They're the DCEU of music for me. It's like, yeah, they're okay.
That's a really good way to put it. And I'll rant quickly enough anyway about DC Universe. If anything, man, that was a good comparison. because watching Batman versus Superman, I did not watch the director's cut, but watching Batman versus Superman, the thing that annoyed me the most, like I didn't think it was a good movie. Was it the worst movie? No, but I didn't think it was good because it seems like Warner Brothers' whole message is, well, you wanted Superman and Batman, right? Here they are. Fucking pay us. it's almost like the movie just had contempt for the audience almost, because yep, you had Batman and Ben Affleck looked really good as Batman, but he was like he's branding people and like it, what? And not to mention like the world's greatest detective, which guess what? You cannot dodge that part of who Batman is. Ben Affleck's Batman was the dumbest superhero that you ever, like his whole idea is like, okay, I want to kill the most powerful alien on the planet, so I'm going to literally just set up a trap and wait, and hopefully he flies into it.
He did have kind of an Elmer Fudd quality going on there.
Yes, I'm hunting Superman. I think I've said most of it. Wonder Woman was spectacular. Justice League, again, it was just lazy. It seemed like they could have taken time to flesh things out and come up with a coherent storyline where they didn't even want to show Darkseid, and I get that. But Steppenwolf was terrible. He was just this CGI nightmare, and not in a good way. He was just a green screen for the villains, the heroes to fight against. And so do they need to deep six the universe? I don't know. I will say that there's buzz for Aquaman, and there seems to be buzz for Shazam. You know, there's that. But I think DC lost an opportunity to, in an attempt to be so different from Marvel, they lost an opportunity to be special.
Yeah, and I the funny thing, there's a lot of people that say, well, they were trying to show how they were different from Marvel, and we're going to go at things a different way. And I think it's not so much that. I think that they maybe were making a point of not paying attention to Marvel, and they were just trying to make everything the Christopher Nolan universe. And Christopher Nolan is a great guy to do Batman stuff with, but he's not a great guy to do Superman stuff with. You can't put everybody in the same mold. And we were talking earlier, you were talking about how Guardians of the Galaxy just like opened the doors for Marvel. And I remember with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I've watched, and the early seasons weren't that hot. And as Marvel unlocked more avenues for them to explore narratively, more areas they could get into, the show got better and better. And the Marvel Universe, I think, got better and better the more it opened up and expanded and became a universe rather than just the Avengers movies. And I think that DC, they weren't necessarily trying to be different from Marvel. I think that they just went in the opposite direction. They're like, we're just going to do the prestige superhero movies, the movies that you can take seriously and can get Academy Awards. So we're going to apply the same mold to all these different characters. And it didn't fit them. It's like, part of what was great about Patty Jenkins' Wonder Woman is that she figured out what worked for that character and did that movie. And the only time that movie doesn't work is when it's trying to fit into the mold of the Nolan movies and the Snyder movies, when it works best when it's trying to be the Wonder Woman version of Richard Donner's Superman, about hope and about, you know, being your best self and being putting out goodness in the world and all that kind of stuff. And so, yeah, that was the problem, is they had the right idea of, you know, let's have the directors be in charge and let's have that strong authorial voice, but then they got the wrong authors, or they matched the authors authors with the wrong subject matter. Like Snyder, with a little bit of reining in, I think could have done a great Batman movie. I think that he is much more that mindset, but really Snyder is a guy who, since he's so bleak and so dark and so has such a strong ideology that comes through in his work, you need to give him the question. You know, you need to give him somebody where he can kind of do something heavier than you should probably be able to do with Batman. When you've got Batman branding people and basically setting them up to be murdered in prison and stuff, it's like he's not the Punisher, you know? So are you doing a Punisher movie or are you doing a Batman movie? Because if you can't see that there's a difference between the two, you're probably not in the right, you're not the right guy for this project. And unfortunately, Warner Brothers didn't see that. They just saw the style on display in Watchmen. They didn't realize that there's an ideology that goes behind that and you have to match correctly. So they just try to create a Nolan verse.
Superman.
What's that?
There's Superman as well.
Yeah, Henry Cavill's a good-looking guy, and the cinematography on the Superman movies were good, but the heart wasn't there, and it was very misplaced. He was just on the wrong wavelength. It just was a bad fit. And instead of recognizing that and making a change, that's an area where Marvel did influence them. It's like, no, we got to go full speed ahead on the next movie. We're going to set the next movie. It's like, stop and make sure you know what you're doing before you're lining up Zack Snyder for two more movies before Man of Steel's even out, you know? It maybe doesn't work, and maybe you need to figure out another way of doing this, you know? So
there's this line from Batman Superman where his mom, like, do everything for them or do nothing. You don't owe them anything. And I'm like, what the fuck? What? And see, I get it. They were trying to update the origin into where, like, the whole thought was, okay, well, Superman's doing this out of the kindness of his heart because he wants to, not because he felt like he was forced to or it was indoctrinated into him. See, I get that, but it just didn't come across that way. It came across like his mom was like, man, fuck these people. you can kill them. I don't care. Like, you don't know them anything. And it just, ugh. You can't do Superman that way. You can't. And they tried it, and it comes across that, like, he's a, yeah, Henry Cavill's like a handsome dude, and man, is he jacked. And that's it. Yeah. and you have to have more from Superman. And they tried to play, they played it up a little bit in Justice League where we can't do it without Superman. They did a good job of that, at least. But, ugh, the buildup to him was just awful. It was just terrible.
I think you're already in a bad place, and they've done this. The superhero movies are known for this. If you come at the material embarrassed by the source material, don't do it. Don't do the movie. And I think it's funny because Snyder has such reverence for comics, and he's almost done shot for shot recreations of comics, but it's Frank Miller stuff. It's cynical, you know, dark takes, Alan Moore, that sort of thing, and that's where he works. So the last character you put him on, Superman, but I think that they were trying to course correct. They think that Bryan Singer was too reverent of Superman lore, and they wanted to get somebody that would go in a different direction than that. So to some degree, it's Bryan Singer's fault because he just decided he was going to make a sequel to a 30-year-old Richard Donner movie instead of creating something
which was a bad idea.
So you basically had two wrong guys in a row in going in two different directions, and neither one of them were in sync with Superman. So that's on Warner Brothers, ultimately.
Yeah, and I think even more so, it's ultimately on DC, because DC maybe should have had somebody there at being a, like, you would think that DC would want to have a strong advocate for Superman. For Superman, you can't fuck Superman up. It's too important. It is way too important to everything that the DC universe is to mess up your flagship character. And yep, you can say that maybe the coolest character is Batman, whatever. The flagship character of DC Universe will always be Superman. And yeah, and maybe I think that's kind of a very long story short. You know, like, if you mess up Superman, you're by extension going to mess up the universe. And they haven't gotten Superman completely right yet. Maybe they will. Maybe they'll kind of find just that perfect person to come up with a good vision for Superman. Like, I mean, was it that Joe Kelly story about what's so funny about peace, love? What is it, Truth, Justice, and American Way or something like that?
Yeah, another one.
Yeah, like that. That is a perfect mold for Superman. Like, oh, you think I'm outdated. You think my stuff is hokey. You think you want me to be extreme, but you don't. like, because that's not me. That's not this country. That's not who I am. That would be perfect in my eye. That'd be perfect.
Yeah. DC's never had any hand in the Warner Brothers relationship. You know, DC has no sway. Warner Brothers does what Warner wants to do. And again, out of the blue, they'll do a Superman movie or a Batman movie that makes a ton of money. They're like, oh, okay, well, more of that. But they don't have faith in their universe. They don't have faith in their comics. And one of the reasons why Marvel is what it is, for starters, it's Marvel Studios first. They got bought by Disney later on. They were in cooperation with other studios at first. It was always from the not necessarily the comics, but from the Marvel Entertainment complex outward. So the priority has always been about getting it right. And the whole reason why Kevin Feige is where he is because he was working on the X-Men movie. And people like Laura Schuler Donner would see that he was the guy who's trying to, when they went too far astray, would try to bring them back. And it would be the true north on those earlier Marvel movies. And so that's why he got to the position he was in. And they've yet to have anybody like that who knows the universe and cares about the universe and is a shepherd for and protector of these characters at Warner Brothers the way that they have Feige over at Marvel. And I fear for Marvel if Feige ever leaves, and I hope that he never leaves. I hope he's there forever and trains up a bunch of people to do well. But the fact is, even if he does, you've already got those movies that have gotten it right. And so you've shown everybody what you need to do. You've shown the way. And they've yet to really do that at DC because they sometimes they go out of their way. It's like, oh, well, what Tim Burton did, what Donner did, that was great back in the 70s and 80s, but we're trying to do our new thing now, so we're going to have to take our whole different take. It's like, well, hold on a second. If you're going to do a whole new take, why don't you do that on another character and figure out, you know, you have to know who Superman is, because if you start playing with Superman and you break him, you're breaking something that's part of the fabric of, you know, world lore, you know, not just American lore.
Hello, I'm Pat Sampson, and I would like to invite you to join me on my podcast, The Long Box Crusade. On this podcast, I'm reading through my 20-plus long boxes that I have stored away in my basement. On each episode, I will select a random issue from my collection and take a very highbrow, thoughtful approach to examining these truly American art forms that help to shape our popular culture.
Oh, I like comics too. Can I get a comic out of my long box that syncs up with the month and year of the comic from your long box and chat about that too? Oh, and video games. Can we talk about games? Or maybe James Bond too. I love James Bond.
Fine. Jared Elbrick, a.k.a. the Yard Sale Artist. We can add some of your comics and enthusiasm to the show. It might help get a deeper introspection of...
Did someone say James Bond? I love James Bond, and I love comics too. I can bring a comic from my long box to sync up with you guys. I also love movies and music, even news stories that tie into the time period that match the comic books we review.
This is what I get for inviting both the Albrecht brothers into my show. Jason, how the heck can we fit all that into my deeply intellectual review of... Well, you know what? Fine. Let's do it. Let's cram it all into one podcast. Join us on the Longbox Crusade, folks. We'll bounce around in time from issue to issue, pulled randomly from my long boxes, and the Albrecht brothers will bring along issues with the same month and year cover date. We'll talk about the comics and the time period they come from, including...
World news of that time. Top 40 music chart toppers.
Movies, both good and bad. Maybe even some favorite recipes.
Whatever I think is funny.
We'll probably have to suffer through things that Jared thinks are funny.
We'll jam it all into one pop culture extravaganza, examining the comics in my long box and the time period surrounding them. Join us for a wild ride through time on the Long Box Crusade podcast as we attempt to read them all.
What's in your long box?
And that was a sequel too. No, there's Big Top Pee Wee.
Yeah,
yeah.
Nobody gives a shit about sucked. Big Top Pee
Wee's Big Adventure was fantastic.
Wasn't
Large Marge sent ya?
You tell him Large Marge sent ya.
I always love. Dude, my favorite scene. The
I couldn't look. I was when I was a kid.
Dude, that freaked
me. Scared
me
so much. I couldn't.
Yeah. What is it? The stars are
The stars at night are big and bright.
keeping a heart.
Dude, that was so Texas.
The Alamo basement joke never gets fucking old.
It's, yeah, that was pretty good.
I'm like, you never saw Pee Wee's Big Adventure? Like, huh?
Why won't you watch Pee Wee?
Because she just thinks this dumb. She thinks Pee Wee Herman is just a weird guy who jerked off in a fucking theater and doesn't want to see it.
I think it's funnier now as I get older, realizing that Pee Wee was the product of dirty jokes that then got cleaned up for kids, but still had a dirty joke tone to it that as children we didn't get until you get older and you realize, like, dude, Pee Wee lives in like a fucked up house. Like, he's high. He's on some strong shit, dude. Talking couches and shit. Genie's making wishes. Because you watch the original.
Well, and then he wears makeup and he's got the fucking rosy cheeks with lip gloss on or whatever. Yeah. Yeah,
well, they were doing.
Pee Wee's a weird fucking dude.
Well, they did the original one. There was like a lot of sex jokes with him and Miss Kitty about her tits being big and something. I'm like,
oh, it was like a showtime.
Yeah, yeah. It was one of those after hours shows that would come on at midnight and they would perform, and that's where Lawrence Fishburne and all that came out, and they showed like footage of them, and he's making jokes about her big tits and like rubbing, like motorboating it. I'm like, this was Pee Wee. So then when I go back and I would catch episodes when I was, you know, when they would do repeats, I'm like, oh, dude, like if you watch those shows and you watch that, you're kind of like, oh, I get you.
I think that's a common thing with a lot of kids stuff, though.
Oh, no, they're doing and I know you hate when I watch those top 10 lists, but they did a top 10 adult jokes that got snuck into cartoons. And there's the number one was there was a TV show that came out called Cow and Chicken on Cartoon Network.
Mm-hmm.
And they do a female biker joke that they love munching carpet. And these biker chicks are sitting there eating carpet. They're like, we're the carpet munchers. And they're eating it. And I remember I'm like, when I saw them, I'm like, holy shit. And they're like, got by the censors. No one caught it. And
it was a carpet munching joke and Beef's Butthead.
But see, you expect it there.
You don't expect it in Cow Chicken. When I was a kid, and
they showed another one where.
No, but I vividly remember the first time I was a kid and somebody referred to it as eating, like munching carpet. And where the fuck was it?
Well, they showed one for Rocco's Modern Life where there's all these little berries and he gets some berries and then he goes and grabs some berries again and all of a sudden a bear jumps out of the bush screaming. And you come to realize that he grabbed his balls and crushed them. And I remember I sat there and I'm like, I remember seeing that and not getting the joke. At the time, until I'm older now. Now I'm like, holy shit. And then, of course, they did Ren and Stimpy, but those fuckers got away with murder.
Ren and Stimpy was barely kids' TV.
Yeah. I remember watching it, and I was like, even I knew when we'd watch it on Nickelodeon, I'm like, dude, this shit's fucked up. Especially when they would show those close, detailed veins and hair. Yeah. It was still a great show, though.
Ren and Stimpy's kind of forgotten. I don't know why that's not.
Maybe there's some kind of rights issue. Maybe Quick Paloozie's got a piece of it or something.
Yeah, they got fucked. A lot of those creators got fucked.
My brother was really into Ren and Stimpy. He used to love to do the happy, happy, joy, joy.
Happy.
He's not the only fucking one, dude. That was a big fucking deal.
You idiot! He did that a lot. Yeah.
Didn't you do that a little bit?
Probably, but if I did, I got it from him. Because I didn't watch Ren and Stimpy very much. It was that would have been a learning thing.
Loved Ren and Stimpy. Loved it.
Yeah. But no, I got that from him. I'll have to copy that. Because, I mean, I watched a little bit with him.
Who?
But it was never really my bag. Rick Paluzzi in general never really was my bag. Too much gross out humor, you know.
So what did the hell you
I just like the voices. Particularly the voice for Ren, I thought was fun.
Of course.
Stimpy, not as much, but, you know. I remember my brother bought the first issue of the comic, too.
Really?
I think I had it, too.
Marvel, didn't they have, like, an air freshener? There was, like, a foul air freshener?
No, that's Beavis and Butthead.
Butthead air freshener? What did Ren and Stimpy have, number one, then?
Yeah.
I don't know.
They had some kind of bound. There was polybag with something.
I remember there was a Beavis and Butthead, I think they had an air freshener smell like fart or something like that.
Okay.
And number one issue, because I remember seeing it. It came in like a little plastic guard inside the book, and I was thinking, I was never big into Beavis and Butthead.
I liked Beavis and Butthead.
Loved it.
That one I did watch.
Loved it.
I did like the movie, never liked the show.
I didn't like the movie, but the movie was okay.
It was just too damn long.
It was better than the South Park movie, but...
What?
Damn sight better than the South Park movie.
I like the South Park book.
The musical? Not my bag, man.
Ready?
Way too fucking
long. Are we going to go see La La Land?
That's the first time anybody's asked me that shit.
I'm kind of interested in seeing it. I like
It's gotten some acclaim, so I don't know a lot about it.
It's a musical.
Yeah.
I used to go to musicals all the time.
I like it. That's one movie I don't have to worry about with Paquita, because she can't stand musicals. It's a thing. So, I'll go see La La Land if you want to.
I keep hearing really good things about it. Everybody's
I've heard good things, too. It's supposed to be really life-affirming. It's like one of the only things that anybody found any pleasure in all of last year, so...
The funny thing
I think it did really well at the Golden Globes.
The people who talk about it are people who you wouldn't expect like that kind of stuff. Like, I listened to some podcast and the guy was like bashing on musicals and he's like, I gotta take it back. He's like, I enjoyed it. I loved all the songs. I'm singing along. I'm like, he's like, I literally went out and bought the soundtrack. And I'm like, damn.
But it seems like with Hamilton, musicals are making a little bit of a comeback.
I tried watching some of the stuff they released. I don't find one bit.
I'll watch it eventually, but I'm waiting to actually see the entire production. I don't like hearing like songs from musicals out of their context and stuff. So I've tried. I really try to avoid
don't like the style of it. I don't think there's anything.
The whole hip hop musical thing.
I don't find it clever. Yeah, I mean, people are like, oh, it's so. I'm like, I don't know, it's not clever. Like, I don't think it's clever. Mm-hmm. Okay. I mean, they reinterpret it in a minority view. I'm like, okay, but I don't find it clever. And I've heard like three or four of the songs. Now, granted, they were probably out of context, but just the songs by themselves, I'm like, man, like I couldn't sit through one of shows. That's why I think that's one of those white people guilt things where they're like, oh my god, a minority doing a white man. Oh, it's amazing. I'm like.
Well, I think that musical saved Hamilton from getting booted off the bill.
What do you mean?
I think they were going to try to take him off the 10 to put Harriet Tubman. And
I thought, no, that was Jackson. No,
that's what they decided after the fact. I think the original plan was to boot Hamilton instead. And then because of this play, they're like, no, we suddenly... Because I didn't know why the fuck I should give a shit about Hamilton. I didn't know enough about American history to know that. And I've always hated Andrew Jackson, so I've definitely wanted to throw him under the bus anyway. But especially once the play... Yeah, but especially once the play got big, then it's like it wasn't even a question anymore. It's like, no, we're definitely fucking over Andrew Jackson and fuck that son of a bitch. So
true.
I remember fucking being in history class in junior high and hearing what Andrew Jackson was up to. It was like, you motherfucker, I hated that guy.
Yeah. Well, no, he was
Mr. Manifest Destiny, kill all the fucking Indians. Well, he's like
one of
the
Native Americans.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was Trump of that era, kind of, I guess. Yeah, because I remember
Trump isn't as industrious as Andrew Jackson, though.
No, but he well, no,
but right. He will definitely try and put his face on a piece of currency at some point.
Oh,
I'm sure.
given. Oh God, I don't want to see that fucker's face on anything. I'm still debating on downloading that app that turns all pictures of Trump into kittens. Because I'm just so sick of looking at the guy already.
Dude, I didn't like him before he even got into politics. He's
fucking ugly, man.
Back in the day, I remember I just liked him when he was fighting Rosie O'Donnell. And I thought, what a scumbag.
Yeah. Hey, if I had a choice between looking at Rosie O'Donnell and Donald Trump, no fucking contest. Give me Rosie O'Donnell.
Give me Trump. Oh.
Sorry, you're going a different way with that. If Rosie O'Donnell's vagina, I'd rather look at than Donald Trump. Okay?
Just right there. Pretty similar.
With more teeth and all.
Yeah, it has more teeth.
Oh my god.
I'm gonna throw it in the trash.
Are we gonna play this podcast game?
Yeah. I was waiting for him to finish the baklava because he was occupied with that. And then he was occupied with holding the plate.
Let's play a game where you try and turn.
Sorry, I was talking to y'all.
Oh, sorry, I was conversing with my friend.
I was being the grown up. Almost done, man. I know it's an endurance contest. Because I've done that enough.
I was just checking to see if it was condensating anymore so I could set it up.
I will start drinking one of those peach bellinis with the full intent of finishing the bottle and then progressively lose.
They're rough,
interest.
Man. They're rough. But I'm taking them. I'm taking these for the team.
They're still alcoholic. That's what's important.
Next time I'm bringing Mazorca water, man.
Some Mazorcas.
Yeah. If I'm going to pay for water, I want it to taste like something, guys.
I need water.
Just drink the fucking water out of the fridge.
Nah.
It's filtered.
Nah.
Why is my filter not as good as Ozarka's filter?
Because that's put through charcoal and shit like that. At least that's
my shit's put through probably charcoal or some shit like that. That's not a cheap refrigerator, so
yours is probably full of charcoal. Dude, you got a fucking massive collection.
Yeah, it's not too bad.
Is it because of all the half-off shit?
It helps. Yeah, well, since I switched to comic distributors, I get a better discount on independent stuff than I used to when I was going through that other company. And I'm liking buying independent stuff more. And I also had started a policy a while back where Image would do their $10 trades. Yeah. And so I would buy all of them. I'm cutting back from that now because they've started fucking with it. See, the whole point of a $10 introductory price trade is it's supposed to hook you into the book, right?
Yeah. They give the first taste for free. And
right, yeah. Like, well, not for free, but it's a loss leader. And so, you know, and everybody wants to do this decompressed storytelling now, so that means, okay, so you're going to give me a 6-issue trade for $10. I'm going to try that regardless of subject matter. I've bought a ton of trades that I would have never fucking looked twice at if they hadn't been for $10 and they were substantial trades. And I've talked about this on Twitter recently, like Rick Remender. Totally turned my opinion of him around. I used to really dislike that guy. I thought that he was one of these dudes who wanted to write screenplays, and because he wasn't getting into Hollywood, he wasn't in Hollywood, so he was just taking his screenplays and turning them into comic books. And I was like, fuck that guy, he's not a real comic book guy, I hate that dude, whatever. And I knew, and you know, it didn't hurt that you liked him so much on stuff like X-Force, but that wasn't going to make me change my mind. But what happened is he started doing what Kirkman did with Walking Dead, giving me these $10 introductions introductory trades and telling good fucking stories.
Black Science, I love Black Science.
See, and I still haven't read my copy, so I'm several trades behind on that one because I still haven't read that first one. I just, because again, my opinion of Remender was colored, so I bought it, but it's like, yeah, that's the one guy I really don't want to read, so I put it off to the side. But then Deadly Class and Low was really fucking good too. And now if, Remender, I'm going to buy that shit. And you know, all this set of trades I've been paying full price for. So you win. You did it. You got me to buy your books. And that's happened with a number of trades too, like Birthright's another one.
Yeah,
where I'm really digging that one. Saga, I think was started out that way, and I've been buying all those.
Is that one about
to end? I don't know. I hadn't heard about that.
I think they're trade 7, right?
Paper Girls, they did that with, and the first volume of Paper Girls was really good.
I didn't think we were recording.
It's a good conversation, so maybe you should record just
a but Paper Girls, I would have probably gone ahead and paid full price for that first trade just because I like the creative team, because I'd already gotten hooked by Vaughn on other stuff. But got that first trade, dug it. Now it's an automatic buy for me. So that's Paper what you Girl. Do, huh? Okay. Paper Girls. Yeah, it's weird because it's not what you think it's going to be. Paper Girls, I can't describe it. You have to read it.
Yeah, I'll have to borrow yours.
Or I could describe it, but I'd be doing it a disservice and making it sound hackier than it is. It's very interesting.
I really like Vaughn's writing, so I would read
it. Well, Cliff Chang's a great artist, too. Yeah, I love. I mean, because he did like 3 years on Wonder Woman, and I couldn't buy any of it because fuck Brian Azzarello and fuck what he did with Wonder Woman so goddamn hard I can't even tell you how much fuck Brian Azzarello. But I've always liked Cliff Chang's art, and then putting him with Vaughn on an Image book, it's like, fucking automatic sale. No problem there. But so what, like this month, I didn't buy any of those fucking trades because what they're doing is they're wanting to give you 4 issues for $10. And it's like, well, you guys can't tell a story in 4 issues anymore. You guys have apparently lost the ability to do that. So, and I've read a number of trades that have been like this where you're reading it and it just stops abruptly because they don't write for 4 issues. They're still writing for 6 issues, even though the trade's only 4 issues. Oh, by the way, Descender's another one that hooked me. I haven't gotten to be a big Lemire fan yet. Jeff Lemire.
Yeah.
And I'm not that big on Dustin Nguyen, but the first Descender trade was really cool. And I think the third current one's 3. And as far as I can tell, I'm just going to keep buying.
He wrote, Sweet Tooth too, right?
Yes, he did. Yes, I know you like that one too,
dude. And that was all because of you.
Oh yeah,
because you're like, you should try indie books. And I liked some of the stuff I read of his from his DC writings. I think he did some DC stuff, right?
Oh yeah. He got started his independent stuff. Then he did Sweet Tooth at Vertigo and some other Vertigo stuff. Then he started doing some mainstream DC stuff. Now he's doing mainstream Marvel stuff.
So you got me to like try something independent, which the artwork I'm not a big fan of.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. Into his art, have him doing like variant covers on Valiant books. I'm like, what the fuck are you guys doing?
So I'm not a huge fan of the artwork, but there was a simplicity to his writing that I enjoyed. And I read the first big, thick Omnibus. And I was like, damn, like I really enjoyed it. So I'm waiting for the second one to finish out the story.
Yeah.
The thing that sucks is at the end of the book, they actually tell you how the series ends because the series is already over. So I was like, okay, well, I know how it ends, but I still want to read it.
Yeah.
That's a good book, though. I liked it. So, yeah, that was one writer you kind of got me hooked on. And like I said, right now, that I'm on I'm on a Green, Yellow, and Red Lantern tear right now, like just blowing through all their stuff. Yeah.
But so these trades are doing, and it's something I caught them doing, like Boom was doing this shit where they wanted to do these 4-issue $10 trades. And it's like, as far as I'm concerned, I think print's going to die anyway. I'm waiting for the day when print beyond trades, you know, with like the floppies, the monthly floppy. Mm-hmm. I keep waiting for that to die. And Marvel is still putting out their $4 monthlies. I'm like, fuck you. I'm not going to pay $4 for your monthly. I'm going to get on Marvel Unlimited and read your comics that way. So for me, a comic book is $3. You know, it's something really special. I might be able to go $3.50, but a comic book is supposed to be $3. So if you're offering me a trade of 4 issues, that's worth $12 to me, and that's if it's something I actually care enough to buy as a floppy. So getting $2 off on a 4-issue trade isn't a deal to me. So you're not doing that as a loss leader. That's a trade, and I better be interested in what you're selling or I'm not going to buy it. And many a times, especially with Boom, I just wouldn't buy their trades. I don't think Dynamite got into that racket. Maybe Oni did a few like that as well, and I just wouldn't buy the stuff. But now Image is doing the $4, $10 trade.
grades. And I'm like, no, fuck you. Because unless I'm already interested in the book, unless I was already planning on buying it, I'm not giving you $10 for four issues. You're going to give me five or six. I'm willing to compromise. We'll go with inflation. You can do a five issues. I believe you'll tell a complete story in five issues, or I'll give you that benefit of the doubt for $10. But four for ten, no, fuck you. That's not a deal. That's not a loss leader. That's not a introductory pricing kind of deal. And so the funny thing is, too, is once you've got me hooked, my number on trade paperbacks is $20. As long as it's a material I like, and as long as it collects at least, you know, five, six issues thereabouts, you get $20. Damn. That's fine. That's retail. I get a discount, obviously.
Yeah.
But retail price, $20, I won't even think twice about it. If you're one of those books that I was just saying that I got hooked on and like, yeah, boom, you got it. No worries. But you got to hook me first. So if you don't get the first sale to me, but by fucking me on that introductory trade, by not giving me a good enough deal to make it an automatic purchase, you just don't get that first purchase. And if you don't get the first purchase, you're not going to get the second, and you're not going to get the third. Yeah, it's just the blunder. Okay. So you just fail. You shouldn't even bother to have done the $10 trade because you're not going to get my fucking money. And I know I'm not alone in that because those books don't get that. I can't think of any of these ones where they went cheap like that blew up.
Yeah.
You know, all the ones that blew up, your Watchmen, your Sagas, they were six issue trades. They told you a nice substantial story. So yeah, go cheap and do a half measure and you're going to get a half measure response.
Well, you heard, right? Marvel's getting rid of their digital copies now to their issues.
Well, what it is you get two comics instead of one comic.
But it's random comics. Right. And it's like, who gives a fuck? Like, what's the point? Because I know people who literally will buy the copies. These same people, well, not the same people, but some people will buy the copies just to own the digital. And I will tell them about Unlimited. And they're like, nah, I like the copy so I can get it whenever I want. I'm like, dude, you can download up to like 10 books on your, nah, I want to own it. It's mine.
Yeah. Well, no, like, I mean, and I get that too.
I think it's weird.
Like when I've let my Marvel Unlimited lapse, the app is still sitting there, but the stuff that I had in my library, I can't access. And so if I want to get back in there, I've got to start paying again, right? Yeah. Where if you've already paid and you've got the copy and it's on your devices, you've got it forever. Or at least until somebody figures out a way to take it from you or your shit crashes or whatever the fuck.
Oh, no, mine crashed one day. I was pissed because I'm like, I lost my library and I freaked out. Mm. And they're like, oh, no, there it is. And I was like, okay, good. Because I've bought some books, like people I know who will buy and they'll miss issues. So I went back and bought those fucking issues so I could have the fucking collection because I'm a completist.
Yeah.
If you're into any kind of collecting, you're a completist.
Yeah.
You know, the degree of complete, who knows? I'm pretty hardcore. If I have 1 through 7 and I'm missing 4, I will fucking go buy 4 at full price. And dude, I actually bought 2 of them at markup, fucking assholes. But I had to have this. I just wanted to have this.
I can still remember how that music used to make me smile.
This is Rock and Roll Radio. Come on, let's rock and roll with the Ramones.
Okay. Wait, are you going to make a new intro for this?
I'm here to talk about one song, so here I go.
Welcome to One Song Each.
This podcast is going into a song.
Whoever's with us, but usually the three of us, Diablo Frank,
Illegal Machine,
Mr. Fix It.
We're going to take a few minutes to talk about a song.
One song.
Each of us will bring one song to the table.
So we're just going to pick a song and talk about it.
Choose a random song without consulting the others and without picking a theme. No themes.
Except for the times when we'll pick a theme.
Well, we'll tell you if we're going to pick.
Generally speaking.
Sometimes we talk about the artist's career overall. Sometimes we talk about a particular album.
You can either be technical or more intimate.
There's no prescribed link. There's no prescribed content.
Randomly pulled from our brains.
Do you play the song itself?
And we play the song for each other and then comment with a story, an anecdote.
The actual meaning of the song or more history.
Either what the song means to them or a life experience that was the soundtrack to.
What it triggers in your memory. Talk about.
All right, you guys want to hear my song?
I think it's probably one of the most beautiful songs I've ever heard.
I'm in the middle of this parking lot, and I just start dancing. Next phase, new
way, that's great. It sort of became our song.
I
turned up
the radio. I will never in my life forget that performance.
I want to talk about what I think is the greatest American love song. Do you like
good music? If you don't love the blues, you have a hole in your soul.
What happens when we rap about like the actual world and people are like, what?
But because of the mood of the song, it made me feel sad. I felt this melancholy. And even after the song was over with, that melancholy stayed with me.
After that, every time I got in any kind of relationship and the girl would break my heart, this is the song I crawl back to.
This is a Roll Spine podcast.
That's one song each, and it's a very interesting concept.
What was the song we heard earlier? The Disturbed cover?
Sounds of Silence.
There you go.
Hello, darkness, my old friend.
You don't know the lyrics?
No, I don't know it. I'm not a big Storm and Garf. Actually, they was playing at the bank when I needed to get some paperwork from them. And as I was driving out, I didn't have my tablet going or any music going. So as I'm driving back home, I'm like, what was it? You can be my bodyguard. I could be your long lost pal.
Paul Simon. Bum, bum, Chase.
You can call me Daddy.
I thought you said Betty.
Bad Bobby. I don't know what the fuck it is. Okay. But anyway, the point is you.
I can call you Al.
Call me Al.
Another one out.
But anyways, because Sounds of Silence is Paul Simon and Art Garfunkel. Yeah. So that was another Paul Simon song.
The one I was thinking about today was Bobby McFarlane.
Oh, yeah. Don't worry. Be happy. Don't worry. Be happy now.
I have no idea.
Well, what's funny is all these years, I thought that rumor was true that Bobby McFerrin had killed himself.
Yeah.
And for the irony. And then it's Robin Williams who's in the video with him that ends up killing himself. So.
Well, apparently he hated that song because pretty
Robin
much.
Robin Williams or Bobby McFarlane?
Bobby McFarlane. Because everywhere he went, that's all they wanted to hear was that one song.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, you know, I do a lot of other songs, but no one gave a shit about that one song. So I remember I watched some behind the music and he said for a long time he hated that song and now he's made peace with it.
Yeah.
It's funny when an artist makes peace with the one song. That like you know thrust them into stardom. That what was it? Warrant and Cherry Pie.
Well, Warren had a few songs, but Cherry Pie was the big one.
Yeah, because I just remember he said that, you know, he hated that song so much that you could go to any carnival and they had a cherry eating contest and that damn song would be playing in the background.
Yep.
So.
Yeah, well, we saw Cake a few years back and they made a point, I think, of not playing The Distance. And so as we're walking to our vehicles, I think it was me and Mac and Paquita, some frat bros were driving by like singing, "We're going the distance." It's like they didn't play that song for a reason because of you fucking assholes. So.
Not too long ago, we went to a concert, and the closing band was... Oh, damn, what's the name of that group? They sing, "Staring Down the Barrel of a 45 Ford."
I don't know it.
Oh, well, they're famous for a cover of Skynyrd's song, Simple Man.
Okay.
They're kind of famous for that cover. And so we went to see the band, and it was a bro concert. It was all bro music.
Yeah.
So I'm just like, I mean, we got free tickets. You know, me and her got to hang out, so it was fun. But we're sitting there, and she's asking, what kind of music? And I'm like, this is very much bro music. Because, I mean, everyone around was like, bro, bro, bro. And so...
Could you call that a bro hymn?
Okay.
True. A bro hymn?
And so we're leaving, and I told her, the only two songs I would have wanted to hear... Well, we heard 45 and another one, and I was like, there's only one other song that I really cared to hear, and they never played. So as we're leaving, because, I mean, people started leaving early, we're in the parking lot, and I started hearing Simple Man. So I said, hold on. Got it. You know, it's Skynyrd. We got to sit here for a minute. So she thought I was crazy for that. But we sat in the parking lot listening to him. Because it's, you know, the pavilion, the Woodlands Pavilion. So you don't have to pay. You can literally park in the parking lot and listen to a show.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I hate going to shows out there. It suck.
Yeah, terrible. Well, it's, you know, Mac's favorites, the Beastie Boys, and they pretty much disowned Licensed Ill to a large degree. Yeah, because of all of the sexism, and because when that album got big, they were trying to do like caricatures of frat boy type behavior. And the problem is, after a while, they weren't actually playing anymore. They were being misogynistic. They were being sexist and nasty and mean spirited. And so that's why they kind of like laid low for a little bit and then came back with Paul's Boutique, where it was a much more artistic album where they kind of got back to who they wanted to be, not this shitty jerks that they had been during the License to Ill tour.
All I know is I hate that Fight for Your Right.
Yeah, that song sucks.
I hate that song so much.
So sick of that fucking song.
I never liked it. Even as a kid, I hated that song.
I liked it okay as a kid. Never. My brother had License to Ill.
So did I. I had the album, dude.
Yeah.
That's how old I am. I had the fucking album.
He had it on cassette.
Oh, we had the album, and I remember I played that fucking album. Who was it? I remember we had albums. My sister was the first one to buy a CD back when they came in those huge boxes.
Right. They were about a foot tall, I think, 9 inches to a foot. And you had the big cardboard case and you would sort of push out the top.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I remember because she wanted to buy the Beastie Boys on CD because we kept ruining the record because we would just play the hell out of them. And tapes you could get, but you had to go to the flea market. And they were always bootlegs and didn't always get good tapes. So
I never got tired of Paul Revere. That one was always a good song. Just recently, though, I was working on a project and I happened upon, I had a copy I'd gotten from my brother, Squirrels by the Beastly Boys.
Back in the other day, I saw a squirrel get blown away. They served him on a dinner tray.
baked him into a souffle. Squirrel season opens up today. If you're a squirrel, run away. I don't know what else I should say. Please call the ASPCA.
That's and, sad. You know, that's so it's kind of cute, though. It still works.
No, it's sad. Very fucking sad.
But I'm trying to remember the first CDs we got. If I remember correctly, what happened is we got a stereo that played CDs sometime around 90, I think. And we went to one of those Columbia Record Club deals and got a selection of CDs. And if I remember correctly, I think we got like Fleetwood Mac Greatest Hits. I got Paul Abdul Forever Your Girl. We had one of those collections of Hits of the 80s.
Gold and Platinum, Volume 6. Featuring Kokomo by the Beach Boys, Wishing Well by Terrence Trent D'Arby, Tell It to My Heart by Taylor Dane, Only in My Dreams by Debbie Gibson, Baby I Love Your Way, Freebird Medley, Free Baby by Will DePower, One More Try by George Michael, Electric Blue by Icehouse, A Groovy Kind of Love by Phil Collins, Time and Tide by Beja, Don't Worry, Be Happy by Bobby McFerrin, The Locomotion by Kylie Minogue, I Wish I Had a Girl by Henry Lee Summer.
No. And so there, I remember the design. It was like white with all those little geometric shapes like everything was around 1989. Can't remember anything besides those three, though. Well, we played them quite a bit. And then like later that year, I think that all went into a pawn shop and then we moved somewhere again and all that shit was gone. Because like you could pawn, well, I guess you could still pawn. Nobody wants CDs anymore.
No, dude.
Yeah, back then it was actually probably
like,
pretty good money.
Are there stores you can buy like music? Soundwave. I'm trying to think, like, is there like a record store you can actually go to?
Well, they still have CDs in a lot of pawn shops these days, but they want too much for them. I would go and want to buy them, and I figure
they still sell them at Walmart. I don't even think
they still sell at Walmart.
Really?
I still refuse to buy music at Walmart though, because I remember they used to censor their stuff. Yeah. I don't know if they do or not anymore, but just because of the history, knowing that if I happen to be at a Walmart, I won't even think about buying any music.
Well, I usually don't go to Walmart unless I absolutely have
same
to.
Same here.
I can't think of, like, I know they still sell DVDs, but I can't think of, I don't remember seeing CDs the last time I went. Typically,
the only time I'm in a Walmart is if it's in the middle of the night and I need to go get some groceries or anything, because the one thing you can rely upon them for is to be open 24 hours. Typically, if I can avoid it, I skip it.
Hi, everybody. This is John Lamoureux. Thanks for listening to this introduction to my new podcast, The Hustle. I wanted to explain kind of the mission statement and the inspiration for this podcast. The reason it's called The Hustle is because we try to find musicians who are out of the public eye. Maybe they were one-hit wonders. Maybe they were big regionally, but not nationally. Maybe they were dropped from their major label after an album or two. Maybe they were bigger in the 70s, and then MTV kind of came along, kind of changed the rules on everybody. Those people, they've got to hustle to get paid, to get heard, to get music put out there, to sort of rise above the noise that's out there. These are artists whose stories don't get told very often. I wanted to set out to kind of find those people, learn a little bit about what their lives must be like. What does it take to maintain a career in music? And if you don't, what's that transition like from one minute thinking that you might be a rock star or even being a rock star to transitioning into being a regular person? Maybe these people are sitting in a cubicle next to you. I wanted to explain the inspiration for these. The first may sound kind of obtuse, but I still to this day am pretty moved by the suicide of Stuart Adamson, the lead singer of Big Country. I was a big Country fan, and I remember hearing that he had committed suicide, and it was during a time when the band was really on the decline. Nobody was really paying any attention to Big Country anymore. And I've always thought, if he killed himself because he didn't think people loved him, I loved him a lot. And wouldn't it have been great to have let him know that? Now, he's been dead for, I don't know, close to 15 years, something like that. Way before social media, he probably would have loved that. I don't know him or anything. And I don't think, I mean, me telling him that I loved him and took an interest in his stuff would have had probably very little effect. But it would have felt good to me to be able to tell the people who matter to me that they matter and explain that to them, especially if they're in pain. Sounds obscure, but bear with me. So the second inspiration is a few years ago, I purposely, just so you know, do not collect vinyl. I collect CDs. If I made the transition to vinyl and went out and bought a record player, I would put my family in the poorhouse. I'm sure of it. So I just don't even bother because I don't trust myself to keep it under control. But I went into a local record store here in Denver where I live. And this is not like the hipster record store. This is kind of the dingy, weirdo record store. Of course, this store is no longer around. It's been closed, just like everything else. But I went in there and I started shuffling through the racks. And just album after album of people I had never heard of or seen. I like to think I know a lot about music, but clearly these were people who were just complete strangers to me. And yet here they were. At one moment in their life, they had a burst of inspiration, a burst of creativity. They put it on record. Someone decided that the world needed to hear this. It went out into the world, and it probably, maybe it landed with a thud. Maybe it landed, but then they couldn't keep it up. Who knows? But these are people who had something to say at one time. And I remember distinctly picking up a very, very strange, kind of cool-looking artistic album cover for a band called Flame. And the album was called Flame, which made it really difficult to Google this band afterwards. Flame, Flame, you could imagine. So I pick it up, cool looking cover. I go play it in the store for a little while. It's killer, killer, like dirty rock and roll. These guys are clearly from New York. The lead singer is this tough, tough mama named Marge Raymond. Killer voice, just like something out of Janis Joplin. The band, they're all out of New York. This is scuzzy 70s kind of Aerosmith, bluesy, blues rock. I look at the back of this album, and this album is on RCA, a major, major label at the time. And it's been produced by Jimmy Iovine, who now is rock royalty. This was, I think, one of his early production jobs. But I'm just thinking, look, here's a band with the look, the sound, the label, the producer, and yet, who's ever heard of them, right? Where are these people now? What must their lives be like? And I just became obsessed with finding out what their stories might be. I actually got to speak with Marge Raymond, and that interview will be coming up in a few weeks. Those two things together just kind of drove me to start this podcast. It's one that I would like to have heard, or like to have heard someone else create, so I went and created it myself. Especially now in this day and age, there is no excuse not to discover music. I mean, you can go YouTube, Spotify, iTunes, you can download something. Almost anything is out there somewhere to be had. Let that be sort of a recommendation. A lot of the bands that I'm going to cover here, they're fairly obscure or they haven't been big for a while. You may or may not know who they are. I'm hoping that when you see a name and you're curious, you'll go to YouTube, you'll look at the videos. Chances are pretty good the videos that are out there are what inspired me to find them and track them down in the first place to hear their stories. So there you have it. I would like to communicate with as many of you as I can. Please, if you're listening to this, send me an email at thehustlepod@gmail.com. Thehustlepod@gmail.com. Send me an email. Send me some show ideas. Let me know bands that you'd be interested in hearing from. Now, we're not talking like local, you know, troubadours in a coffee shop. We're talking people who, on a major label, did a national tour, something that maybe played on television, whatever. Something that would have been out there in the public eye for people to consume. If there's somebody out there that you're interested in, let me know and I'll try and track them down and we'll see if we can talk to them and get their story told. Anyway, hope you enjoy it. Thanks for listening and we'll go from here. Thanks a lot.
Chris at Bad Books for Beginners sent us some images related to our last World Spine. Let's see, showing an
image. Is it porn?
It's a little porny.
Now I have to see this.
No, you've got the girl from the 10th in the little schoolgirl outfit with her skirt flying up, and then you've got
we're going to be on a list. We're going to be on a list. I already feel it.
You got a shot from the Flash Gordon comic from the 90s over at Marvel. You got number 10 with the Nets. I don't know sports, so I don't know who this dude is. You have to tell me. And then we've got an issue of Mad featuring Death Wish.
It's okay. I'm sure they hit a goal/home run/3-pointer somewhere along the line.
Is that the one with the Zamboni? And then also Dr. Ange sent us a shot of Cyberella. I don't remember that. The Helix book from when Vertigo tried to do
the, with the horns?
Sci-fi one?
She had
no,
horns, right?
No, you're thinking of Cybernary from Wildstorm.
Oh, okay.
This was a Howard Chaykin book, and Ange writes, don't know if Chaykin would jive with them. He seems like a you-have-to-earn-it kind of guy, and he roasted some of the conceits of Image in Cyberella. So I think this is related to our supposing episode where I was saying that they should have somebody like Howard Chaykin working for them. Or could have have, you know, back in the day.
Thank you for the love.
We got some Twitter loving from 108 Sage, Allie Batts, Richard Field, Dr. Ange, Chris of Bad Books for Beginners, Comics in the Golden Age, Daniel French, Fishbonius Sound Design, Dylan A. Lang, The Hammer Strikes, Random Geeky Stuff, It's Plastic Man, Jeffrey Brown, Joe Crawford, Keith G. Baker, Max Romero, Myrna Loy, you know, a very attractive woman of the 1920s and 30s, Paul at Dover, Professor Frenzy, Rad Adventures Podcast Network, Resurrections, and Adam Warlock and Thanos Podcast, Ryan Daly, Secret Wars and Beyond Podcast, Siskoid, Trekker Talk, Unearthly Visions, Wonder Woman Warrior for Peace Podcast, and Zach Sally. Keith G. Baker wrote on the Last Jedi episode, haven't seen it yet, but this will be the first thing in my ear holes afterwards. Maybe the second or third, but definitely up there. Randy Caldwell wrote, it was fine, but then again, it was chapter 8 or chapter 2 of a never-ending Disney series. Some things didn't make sense, but it is a fantasy series rather than sci-fi. I'll buy the Blu-ray, but don't feel compelled to see The Last Jedi again in the theater, and I have movie pass. Not anymore, don't
you? Yeah,
think.
But, well,
It's on fumes now. It's dying, but I don't know if it's completely dead yet. Yes, I am a Trekkie, but I also have a $300 lightsaber. Did you see Solo?
Yes, I did. Now, I told you, if you remove the name Solo from it and the word Star Wars, it's a fine sci-fi film, but it's not the caliber of what you would expect with a Star Wars film. So
Darren Sutherland wrote, hi guys, I thoroughly enjoyed your Star Wars The Last Jedi review episode. Here's a summary of what Ruth and I thought. Ruth and I both thought there was more to like than to dislike. However, we thought the film was overly long and poorly paced with uneven performances. We were both bored several times during the film and found ourselves occasionally looking at our watches, which is not a good sign.
No, that would trump any good stuff that was in the film if you got to look at your watch.
So a high is Mark Hamill's performance as Luke is terrific. He has a wide range of conflicted emotions, yet is funny at times. I didn't like everything they did with his character's story arc, especially not his death scene, but again, I liked more than I disliked about his journey. Medium. Daisy Ridley was great as Rey in the first film. Her performance was gripping and she immediately made me like her character and care about what happens to her. I was ready to follow her journey. However, her performance seems flat in this film. Her emotions are too understated for the plot development. I know she is capable of more, so I'm guessing this was due to the script or choices of the director or both. You down with Rey or nah?
She's better than Anakin. I mean, I don't know if that's saying much, but I mean, I just hate the fact that, I don't know. No, you know what? She was actually pretty decent. I did like the fact that she's trying to save the Jedi books. And I'm sorry, Luke was, this was not my Luke Skywalker. This was a bitter old get off my yard man screaming and ready for death. And then you had to have Yoda come in and do his little punchline jokes. And I mean, he drank blue milk out of some weird creature's teats, pretty much. I mean, it's just, I'm not sure.
Okay. So another high for the movie. John Boyega as Finn was my favorite new character in the previous film. And he is equally great in this film. He is determined, but funny. And he is believable at every point in the film. Finn is still my favorite new character.
Great actor, shitty part of the movie. Who gave a shit about that Vegas? Did you care?
No.
Did you care about the giant horses?
No.
Goat slash people?
No.
Did you care that they went to Vegas?
No.
Did they even accomplish what they were supposed to?
No.
Yeah, that's pretty much.
Another high was Kelly Marie Tran as Rose Tico is a great new addition. Her performance is endearing, sincere, genuine, and funny when it should be. And I got no problems with her. I do have major problems with her being run off of social media.
I didn't mind.
So much dickery.
I just felt she fell in love with Finn way too fast.
Yeah, but I mean, just as an actress giving it up.
Oh no, an actress? No. Oh no, I mean, who cares? She's a character. I mean, she's playing a character. That's her job. That's what she's there to do.
Yeah, don't fuck with her on social media.
You shouldn't mess with her personally, but as a character, it's just too much. And there was too many characters in this movie. Like, we had to go to Vegas, and then we have a ship that's running out of gas, and then Rey's trying to bring Luke, and then Kylo Ren is having daddy. I mean, there was just way too much going on in this movie at one time.
Sadly, a large part of the screen time for Finn and Rose is spent on a meaningless and boring side quest. Concurrent. I completely blame the writers and the director. The entire sequence of going to a casino to search for a code breaker is a waste. They should have been able to think of a better task for them. So, yep, agreed.
Okay, they were running out of gas. Please, someone remind me if there's ever been a reference to that in any Star Wars book, comic, movie, or animated series where they were worried about gas.
They needed more dilithium crystals. Got it.
Come on!
Low. Oscar Isaac as Poe Dameron seemed earnest and believable in the first film, though he was given little to do. While he's given more to do in this film, unfortunately, it's all bad.
Yes, I highly agree. That whole first part, excuse me, I'm waiting for so-and-so. Yeah, I'm still waiting. That was so fucking lame. That made no sense.
The producers are trying to make him this trilogy's Han Solo, but the character is nothing like Han Solo. He is arrogant. Well, Han Solo was arrogant. And moves ahead with his own plans against orders, but his plans always go wrong and his actions lead to destruction of virtually the entire Rebel fleet in this film. He definitely deserves deserves to be slapped and demoted, which happens in the movie. But there is no reason for Carrie Fisher's General Leia and Laura Dern's Admiral Holdo to comment on how much they like him. There is nothing likable. There is nothing but a problem. And yeah, I totally agree. I think this is a situation of a white dude failing up.
Oh, no. That's just you and your soapbox. No, Han was cool and collected. Isaac's, it feels to me like he's so energetic and like.
I don't know that he was collected, but he was cool.
No, he shot first. Where Isaac is just like hyper. He's like, we're going to do this and we got to do it. He's just very, I don't know, man. I didn't see him as a hero.
But it's in the writing mostly. I don't blame the actor. I don't blame the actor. I think it's the writing.
But doesn't the actor translate the writing into a physical form?
You can write this shit, but you can't read it. You know, maybe that was the problem. Maybe he just needed to say, you know, hey, come on. But I don't blame him. Hi. Lots of people seem to complain about Adam Driver as Kylo Ren in the first film, but I thought he was fine in that movie. And I think he does a great job in this film. He plays a powerful yet conflicted and impatient hothead very well. I don't like the character, but I'm not supposed to like him. He's a villain.
Bullshit.
Yeah, I thought he was fine. Lo, I was under the impression that Gwendolyn Christie as Captain Phasma was added to The Force Awakens at the last minute, which is why she had so little to do in that film. However, she again had virtually nothing to do in this film either. The character design is interesting, and I expect something special from a tall and commanding stormtrooper dressed all in silver. She definitely stands out from the crowd, but I don't see the point if they aren't going to do anything with her.
I agree. Yeah,
it would be cool to do like Finn and Rose getting chased by her while they're trying to get something done.
So yeah.
It would be better. Yeah, and give them all more interesting things to do.
Yeah, I mean, he's right. She has a very interesting look. You expect a stormtrooper that looks like that to be a badass. Like, you know, she's an elite. And she barks orders and gets beat up really fast. Like,
they don't do anything with her.
No, it was a waste. Absolute waste. Again, too many characters in this damn movie.
And I think, again, too, they put the blame for a lot of the hate that The Last Jedi got on, like, MRA-type guys and people who hate, you know, what's all these women and black people doing on my show? But here's a big badass chick, and they're not doing jack shit with her in that. Yeah. And I'm offended by that. So, you know, I think it cuts both ways. The story of Luke and Rey is compelling and interesting. It isn't great. And it isn't as well done as the training of Luke in The Empire Strikes Back, but it's mostly good and keeps the film moving. You have your own issues with that.
Yeah, I still say they should have let Luke go to the dark side.
Yeah. Lo, the escape of the Rebel fleet starts off exciting before slowing down to a painful crawl where a key plot point is running out of gas. Seriously? That is as bad an idea as the prequel's key plot points of trade embargoes and midichlorians. It could have been great if they incorporated a cat and mouse chase across the galaxy in this part of the film instead of making us watch spaceships creep slowly across the screen. Yeah, no good.
I personally was thinking about this. Wyatt, since someone was going to run their ship through the main ship anyway, why didn't at one point did they all not just light speed in different directions away? They can only chase one ship down. So the rest of the fleet could have escaped.
I don't know. Didn't they do some kind of Voltron shit where like they
fucking who knows? I would have figured
they were supposed to all get away, and Poe Dameron and the other people fucked up that plan. The plan was everybody was supposed to get away. They only blew up their battleship as a last resort because everybody else who went on their own fucked up the plans of the generals. So it's just, I don't think it's worth putting brain power into. Summary. So in the end, it's a very mixed film. It isn't bad like the prequels, but it isn't great like the original trilogy or The Force Awakens or Rogue One. About a third of it is great, while the other two thirds are just slow and plotting. It isn't what a Star Wars film should be.
I am slightly insulted by that. The prequels were way better than this shit. Better.
You think the prequels
were better? You know my feeling. If you watch the prequels and you have time to watch the animated clone series, the prequels make a whole lot more sense and they're more enjoyable. Standalone, I could see them, but they were still had cool Star Wars, Jedi, Stormtroopers, Jango Fett type shit. Where this movie, we're already in film two, and I'm not sure who the big baddie is anymore because he got sliced in half sitting in his chair, and the bad guy is going to be good, I guess, but I hate Kylo Ren because he throws tantrums through the whole fucking movie. If he's not screaming and crying about something, I guess this is not my Star Wars. Never mind.
Yeah, it's not my Star Wars.
Yeah.
But I liked Rogue One.
That was okay.
I liked Rogue One.
I still think our ending was better, but...
Yeah. Okay, so Chris from Bad Mix Beginners wrote, download it in time for a listen. Thank you very much. This is for the Untied episode. And wrote, in the queue, Talking Heads are one of my faves, so I can't wait. Great episode. I'm a huge Talking Heads fan. Exposed to them in the early 80s by older brother. Faves album is Remains in Light. Definitely with African elements mixed into music. Brilliant. This Must Be the Place, Naive Melody is a fantastic song, a go-to for a mixtape made for someone I was wooing. Great poetic song about love. And Off Think from Buck Rogers is ingrained in my memory, so loved hearing you guys talk about it. Aaron Gray equals full-on swoon. And for me, it's more like a full-on swing.
Yeah.
You know, that's something we ought to do tonight, is since we don't have Mac around, I still want to do some Buck Rogers stuff. We should just get some, like, random episodes and start some work on Buck fucking Rogers in the 40th, all on right. the 40th anniversary, or whatever the fuck we're going to call this shit. Any comments on Talking Heads, though?
No, yeah, I fully agree with him. I mean, I love the fact that he brought up mixtapes. I mean,
yeah.
It's a lost medium.
Yeah, I wonder what do the kids do nowadays? Do they send them, like, a YouTube
list? No, they just send each other dick pics and shit.
I mean, that's
all they do. Like, hey, girl, while you listen to a little Wayne, here's my little Wang, and they send that shit back and forth. That's what they do nowadays. That we've lost that
love and feeling, that romantic touch, well, that ability to, again, to quote High Fidelity, you're taking somebody else's poetry, you know. So it's a very delicate thing.
Yeah,
but I guess I don't know. Maybe
I just remember, like, that was a big deal in school, like, to give a girl a mixtape.
Yeah, shit. Yeah, I was 100% behind that. We do one song each, and I've still got a whole slew of one song eaches that are from mixtapes that I gave to girls that Paquita will have been asking me about, and then I'll clam up on and then decide to come up with a different song for the next episode. So yeah.
Is Tyler in any of your mixtapes?
No. Thankfully, no. I didn't want to terrify any of the people that I was dating. So yeah, no. Okay, so One Eight Sage wrote, indeed, Aaron Gray gave me funny feelings in the days before I really understood what they meant. Oh, yeah. Unearthly Visions wrote, Frank, I couldn't quite tell from the new episode, but it sounds like you have some appreciation for the David Lynch Dune movie. If so, I'd love to hear you guys do a Film and Water style breakdown of it. I have to disagree with Frank in that at least Morrison would have been on board working on the Image ground floor books. Given his work with The Fourth World and JLA, I think he would have been interested in Liefeld's Avengers versus Darkseid analogs. Morrison would probably have gone so far left field with it, though, that Liefeld might have taken objection.
Yeah, I'm telling you, people like that. People seem to really enjoy that. What it for?
We'll be doing some more spoilers. Yeah,
I got some stuff lined up for you.
Yeah. We've got another one recorded with Freihold, but one of the reasons why we haven't released it yet is because I want to get the mail out.
So, okay.
Oh, you can see the pattern that I'm weaving over here.
So hold on. I see wheels within wheels, plans within plans.
The spike must flow. No,
I would absolutely. Dude, I literally just watched that movie last week. Sorry, I didn't mean to scream in the back.
No, it's okay.
I watched it last week because I went down a YouTube rabbit hole and someone had released all the unused footage and like the alternate endings.
One of those renegade cuts and shit.
Well, they did the alternate endings, and then I got to watch and you know, you could only catch it on the regular TV. The cool thing where they did the cue cards where they would show the different houses and I'm like, well, I've just watched an hour and a half of all this extra footage. Might as well watch the fucking movie. Yeah. So I rewatched
it. How long is the core movie?
Cut or uncut? There's two versions. You have the long with the extended version. Version is about two and some change, I want to say. The uncut is, I want to say one, I don't know, I have the uncut one on digital.
So it's about 400 meters long is what I'm hearing? Like a sandworm?
Yes. Careful as you walk across the sand. Actually, and I just listened to the book on tape because me and Freiho were talking about it, and I don't know why I started because it's so different from the book, but it's, you get sucked into the world and you realize that Frank Herbert passed away and his kids are writing the books and the book's going this really fucked up weird direction, so.
Well, he's got notes and shit they're going off of, don't they?
I believe so. Okay. I mean, I think he wrote like the first three or four. That's why I hope that doesn't happen in Game of Thrones. That would so suck.
Well, based on what the latter seasons of Game of Thrones have been like, yeah, I tend to.
Yeah, I know. If someone else writes it, dude, that last season was garbage. The season seven was horrible. Yeah. But I would love to do Dune. That's one of my favorite sci-fis.
I think, you know, it's me and Mac that need to hurry up and try to watch that. So since you just watched it, and
I'll watch it again. I'll watch it with y'all again. Dude, I love that movie.
I mean, we can watch it tonight if you want to.
I love that movie, yeah.
Maybe that'll be the episode that it precedes us. Okay, so let's see. Jeffrey Brown on the Supposing episode wrote, oh yeah, I'm going to listen to this episode. Cool. Kyle Binning wrote, while listening to this episode, I couldn't help but see parallels between the launch and execution of early Image Comics universe and the DC Cinematic Universe. Little to no character development, so any heavy-hitting character arcs or reveals aren't earned because the character is 5 minutes old, was told everything, not shown everything, and it's written poorly, so you don't really give a shit. But some of the Image artwork beats DC CGI. There were bright spots, Wonder Woman in the DCEU, Spawn and Shadowhawk from the Image side. Image in 90s Marvel Marvel stuff featuring the work of the Image guys and the imitation of their work after they left is very interesting era and weird source of nostalgia for me. Really didn't read that stuff coming out. I was drawn to the much more standard looking artwork of DC. Books that from that period that followed the more house style evergreen look of the characters that I was used to. But I remember seeing all of that other stuff on the shelf, and it carried with it this cultural penetration that comics haven't really had in any other time in my lifespan. So looking at it now, I can't help but feel nostalgic about it, even though for the most part I didn't read much of that stuff. So looking at it now, okay, and just because its presence on the shelf and in culture is ever present in my memories of my childhood, along with neon colors and American Gladiators.
Okay.
Fair assessment. I mean, yeah. Ultimately in the 90s, I ended up going to DC too. I just spent a little bit more time in the other places before I got there. And I did appreciate the Tom Grummets, you know, more than I did ultimately the Image guys.
I planted my fag in Marvel Land from day one and have never left. I was never big in Image, dude. You got me an Image. You got me into DC, you personally. Because I remember I didn't read any DC books except for maybe Batman occasionally. And you're the one that introduced me. Like, I still remember you selling me Preacher One. Like, yo, you need to read this, Garth Ennis. And then after I read that, I was hooked on Garth Ennis. I went back and collected all the demon stuff he wrote. I tend to enjoy more of the obscure DC stuff, though.
Yeah, the off the side kind of stuff. Yeah,
because I'm not a big JLA fan.
I think Morrison's JLA is an exception, though. Didn't you like?
Oh yeah, some parts of it. Some parts are fun.
How about that first arc?
Oh yeah. Oh no, that first trade with the White Martians was fantastic. Yeah.
And then Rock of Ages was pretty sweet.
Rock of Ages is good, but then
he loses weight after he overexpands the league.
What was the military one?
Oh, the Ultramarines.
Yeah, that was.
Then that one had the Mark Pagliarulo artwork. Mark Pagliarulo was like the bane of my JLA reading. Really? Him and Val Simmons. I'm like.
Then they do the Tower of Babel as well.
Tower of Babel was much better artwork. It was, if I recall correctly, it started out with Howard Porter, and I think maybe Mike S. Miller or some other fellow finished it out. But I like the artwork on that one fine. But that was actually a Mark Waid story.
Mark Waid. Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Okay.
And I know you're not a big Waid guy, but I thought that was a pretty good story.
No, big Waid fan.
But Tower of Babel was good.
I thought it was okay.
How'd you like the adaptation?
Oh, which one?
Doom.
Is that what it was?
Yeah.
Okay. I was wondering why it seemed familiar.
I think Doom is one of the best of the original animated movies. I love Doom. It's got Malafaat, the Martian Manhunter villain. So that was a huge assistance in getting me to buy the movie. And then once I did, I was really happy I did because I enjoyed it overall.
I know you're going to hate this, but I just watched the newest DC animated film, Death of Superman.
Yeah.
Pretty good. I was shocked.
I'm happy that that's the case because I picked up a copy of Superman Doomsday from like a Ross or one of those like liquidation stores, and they had a cheap DVD. I picked it up because it had documentaries in it, and the documentaries were fucking fantastic.
Really?
They interviewed like the creative teams of the Superman titles from that time period, and Mike Carlin and all those guys. And I got chills from the documentary because as much as I'm not a huge fan of the Triangle era, Mike Carlin era Superman titles, those people loved Superman. They loved the mythos, and they knew that they were striking a resonant chord with that story.
Yeah.
And I got chills from that documentary. The actual cartoon fucking sucked. I thought that the cartoon was fucking trash because, of course, they tried to put all of it together.
Yeah.
It's the death and the return,
yeah,
and there's really nothing in Rain for the most part aside from his coming back. And I just thought it was trash. The only thing I liked about it was when Lois Lane was going off and interviewing people and talking to the Kents and stuff. When it became Lois's story for that little bit, that was a story that I think needed to be told, and I really enjoyed that segment. But the whole rest of it I thought was just fucking trash. I hated it. So as much as it pisses me off that this is the second adaptation of the death of Superman in a decade's time, and we've yet to get our second Wonder Woman cartoon, the fact is they have announced Wonder Woman Bloodlines is coming out. Of course, everybody was like, dude, they're doing Bloodlines. I'm like, guys, chill out. They're not doing the fucking Bloodlines characters. It's just the name. But I'm really happy they're doing a second Wonder Woman movie, and hopefully they're not basing it off the shitty version they've had.
Wonder Woman did have her first, was it R-rated cartoon when they re-released it, didn't they?
Was it an R-rated version?
Yes.
I didn't think the cartoon changed at all. I thought that they
added
the packaging.
They added stuff to it, I believe.
They added to it? I was not aware of that. I don't think.
Yeah, because I remember the rating went up on it because it was more adult.
Okay, that doesn't appeal to me, though. I don't want to see R-rated Wonder Woman movies, but I wasn't aware they'd put anything new in there. I'm not surprised.
I haven't seen it.
Because the movie was violent, so I could see where they might have had to make a few choice cuts. So it's probably just adding a few seconds.
Mm-hmm.
I have major issues with that cartoon, too. But, you know, we're getting a second Wonder Woman finally, so I'm willing to allow Superman his second pass at the death of Superman. So you enjoyed it, then?
Yeah, it was good. Fryhole saw it. He bought it. We watched
it. Does it have a... fucking going through puberty over here. Did it have a definitive ending or like a cliffhanger?
Well, no, cliffhanger. So the next cartoon is actually already coming out, The Reign of the Superman, where they're going to show all three.
That actually kind of piques my interest because I'm a big John Henry Irons fan, so I might I might be willing to check it out on the strength of that.
I remember that.
So do we have like, is it just like Doomsday or what is in the first cartoon?
Doomsday. I mean, Doomsday goes through the Doomsday. He goes through the JLA.
Justice League?
Yeah, he goes through the Justice League.
See, the only thing that bugs me though is I don't like Doomsday going through the heavy hitter Magnificent Seven style Justice League. I liked him trashing the Justice League International era because that doesn't trash all the iconic heroes just to build up Superman, but it's still a very cool moment to see Doomsday with one hand tied behind his back beating up Guy.
That was my favorite scene of Doomsday in that suit fighting.
Yeah, where in the cartoon I'm assuming it's like Wonder Woman and Cyborg and shit, and I'm not really cool with him trashing those heroes.
I believe so.
Yeah. Well, you watched it. Who's the Justice League in the cartoon? The new one.
I want to say he took out Green Lantern, Hawkman, because I think the Flash.
Well, they reached a Hawkman, so obviously they're not going for the AA list. I want to say
Flash saves them, but then he gets stopped.
So far, Wonder Woman's in there.
Batman was fighting them too. I want to say Batman was thrown. Because see, I just watched that one, and I watched not Doom, the other one, War. Well, I hadn't seen it, so I'm rewatching because I don't own those. So I was like, let me check because I've never seen War, and so I was watching that one too. But I want to say he went. Who else did he dub? Shit, because I mean they fight at the end and they go out the way they do in the comics, where he snaps Doomsday's head, goes all the way around, and I mean it looked great. He dies. They do the funeral. Fuck, why can't I remember? I don't know. I saw it a few days ago, and I can't remember. Oh. Next.
Okay. Odell Ebner Drackner wrote, "It's hard to imagine the Image founders' egos allowing for any kind of help refinement. A lot of the criticism at the time was basically if they'd just use editors, c'est la vie. I think the pendulum swinging away from the sensibilities of the early Image stuff is how we allowed Ellis and Bendis to usher us into this writer-driven age of decompression."
Ellis?
Warren Ellis?
What about him?
That because of the, basically what he's saying is because Image failed so badly by not having writers and editors that it allowed for guys like Warren Ellis and Brian Bendis to build the writer-driven comic book industry.
Become superstars, kind of. Yeah. I could see that. I mean, you were the first one I used to follow. I first followed comic characters and would buy whatever they're in, even no matter how garbage it was. Then I was turned on to art, so then I would follow the artist. And you were probably one of the first people, besides maybe my uncle, that kind of turned me on to the writer. Like, don't follow so much the comic book or the artist, follow the writer. The writer's the storyteller. Because of that, I've followed Garth Ennis and all these writers to this day. To this day, I'll look at the writer before I look at the artist or even the character. I'll read one trade of some artist or some writer I've never read before to get a vibe, a feel for it, and if I enjoyed it, I'll go back and I'll start looking for their old stuff, which will take me in weird corners of comic books that I would have probably never gone or read on my own.
We address this pretty regularly on our Spawnometer podcast about the pros and cons of not getting writers involved. The more early image I read, while I still have the nostalgia glasses on and I respect the hell out of what they're doing, I do painfully miss writers on those books and wish there were more writers on those books instead of the artists thinking they can do it for themselves. Very arrogantly, I agree. But at the same time, I find the current writer-driven age somewhat tedious as well. I find decompression extremely tedious. I really feel like so many story arcs are just drug out far beyond their expiration dates at this point. And I do find I lose interest. Even in books that are well-regarded, I lose the thread. I get bored. I start looking at other things and I don't keep up with them because they're not telling complete stories in a timely fashion anymore. I really feel like you need to be telling a really grand epic. I haven't read Saga in months. Really? And I like Saga, but I just kind of like, you know, I dropped Wicked and the Divine, which I thought was fine. I enjoyed it. I like the artwork. I like the concept. But it was just taking them so fucking long to get anywhere. I just lost interest, so I outright stopped getting that. Where with Saga, I intend to go back to it because I enjoyed it, but it just was taking too long to get where it was going. There's a lot of books like that where I'm into it for a little bit and they basically drag it on so long that I just don't care anymore. You have to tell a really spectacular story for it to go 40 issues, 50 issues.
True. Walking Dead, I'm burned out.
Yeah, completely burned out on that one. I have no interest in that anymore. And I'm such a huge zombie guy and such a huge Romero zombie guy specifically, and they just completely, you know, I think at some point you do need to come to an ending, and the stated purpose of Walking Dead was to tell the story of what happens after, you know, all the other zombie movies ended. But now it's basically Mad Max shit. It's not even a zombie show anymore, and I just don't care.
They just find a new reason to keep the book going.
Whereas Descender's coming to an end, and Descender's been great, and that's another one that's been writer driven, but it's got a really good balance of writing and artwork. It's telling the story fast enough to where you're not losing, you know, the thread, but it's still visually strong, and it's going to come to an end, and basically it's going to be like a first first book, and there's apparently another book coming out of it called Ascender, which I'm assuming is going in another direction. Yeah, another direction, pun intended. I prefer them going that away, but I am happy that there are certain series I like that are going to come to a close because it's probably about time. But I do think the writers are somewhat gratuitous, and while I enjoy a book that's writing focused more than I enjoy a book that's art focused, they both have their problems. But I think that they both need to bring their A game for as long as they have an A game and then go play a different game.
But I think that's more so. I think the issue have more is they're drawing out a story that should be cut short and not so much a writer.
That's much cut short but tightened.
Well, because like I'm reading Warren Ellis's Wildstorms. Yeah, Wildstorms. I'm enjoying it. It's going to be long, but I see where he's building.
But that one's finite too. That's ending. Yeah,
he's building something. He needs all those issues to build this universe because he's creating this. I'm assuming a world that they're going to take off with other writers with.
Well, the Wildstorm, I think is what it's called, is going to end, and so is the Michael Cray Death Blow spinoff series, and then they're going to launch a new Wildcats and maybe an Authority. I'm not sure, but they're launching a couple other books that Ellis is going to write that's going to be continuations.
Yeah.
So that sounds like it's in the realm of what I was talking about. Tell the story you have to tell, then get the fuck out.
Yeah, because I mean, I've enjoyed it a lot. I mean, he's, in my opinion, cleaned up a lot of what we bitch about in the Image books.
Yeah.
He's cleaned up and tightened it, and, you know, I've enjoyed it so far, so we'll definitely do one on that.
Now, it's still mostly what, Wildcats and Stormwatch? What
but the Wildcats are actual teams. It's not like all these weird, costumed characters working. It's a team. It's a cat team. And you know, the cat means something. I can't remember what it is.
Covert action team. Yeah,
but it's Wildcats is, it's a covert team that's not playing ball. Like, they're, I don't know. It's hard to explain. I've only read the first 7 issues, but I've enjoyed it quite a bit because the characters feel familiar enough that I'm like, oh, I know who this is, but they're changed enough where it's like, but I don't know where we're going with this. Like, right. I enjoy his version of Voight. Grifter's different. Michael Cray, Bloodshot? No, Blood...
Michael Cray's Deathblow.
Deathblow is different. Like, they're all different. Even Lord Imp is different. Angie from The Authority is different. Like, they're here, but they're familiar, but different enough that I'm very interested in, like, going with the story, so...
I think maybe the next time we do a Wildcats episode of Spawnometer, we'll try to fold some of that into it, and I'll see if I can't read up...
The first trade is out. I've read the first trade, and that's it so far.
I need to find out when it's going to end, and then once it's...
I think it's 21 issues.
Is it? Okay.
I believe so.
Well, it might be a little bit longer then, but we'll wait and see what happens, because our next Wildcats coverage is a ways off anyway. So maybe the next time we cover Wildcats, we'll also cover that, since you've been reading it and I can catch up with you.
Yeah.
Chris from Bad Books for the Beginners commented on the Guardians Soviet Union Superheroes episode, Oho, which I don't get. I'm sure it's some Russian thing. Wonder Woman
Warrior. That's Vadanya.
Yeah, there you go. Wonder Woman Warrior for Beast podcast wrote of the episode, so many in Soviet Russia jokes, so little time. Corey Hodgson wrote, in Soviet Russia, you don't have time. Time has you. And Ryan Daly wrote, I love that this episode comes down to a 20-minute debate about whether the movie is as good as Suicide Squad.
Dude, that was a rough night, too. We watched that one at like 4 in the fucking morning.
Yeah.
I think at some point, I didn't know if I was dreaming we were watching a movie or I was watching a movie because I was slipping in and out of consciousness during that film.
You didn't miss anything.
I just remember the bear. I remember the whole movie, the rock dude and a bear man turning into a full-on bear is his mutation, thinking, what the fuck did I just watch? Yeah.
Why did you go full bear?
You never go full bear.
You know, half bear is the way to go. Bear, man. You don't go full bear. You want to make the best of both worlds, man and bear. Yeah, okay. So there we go. We're good.
Intoxicated with madness.